I wanted to pick a story to use from the New Testament, but since we're studying Luke on Wednesday night, I didn't want to take any of the stories that we're going to be doing there. And I'm teaching Mark on Thursday morning, and I happened to encounter a story last week that I noticed was not in Luke, and yet it was really interesting. And we all know this. We know the story, but it's in. But I'm going to choose Matthew's account of it. So if you'll turn with me in Matthew chapter 15, it's the story of the Syrophoenician woman. Matthew chapter 15. I like his version of this. It's a little bit more. It's a little bit more of an extended account, and it's really from verse 21 to 28. Going to read it in just a minute. I'm going to give you kind of the context of where it happens. It really is set in the context in Matthew's gospel of discussion about things that are clean versus things that are unclean, and trying to help disciples understand the different what is and what isn't. And it kind of works beginning in chapter 14 and verse 35, where Jesus had been in Gennesaret on the east side of the Sea of Galilee. And while he was there, multitudes came to him, people who were ill, people who were sick, and they would touch him. Which means that he would be defiled ceremonially by some of those people who touched him during that time. So, that's in chapter 14 and verse 35. In the very next chapter, in the first nine verses, is a discussion about, it's really where Jesus is scolding the Pharisees. Because the disciples are not washing their hands properly before they eat. And so they're very irritated by this, annoyed by this, and so Jesus condemns them because they've made the test of purity a test of whether or not you participate in these external washings. So that's the second account. The third incident, when we drop down a little bit further, verse 10 to 20, he teaches what really does make a man impure. When he talks to them about defilement that begins on the inside, from the heart, instead of just the external washing of hands. And then we come to our story in verse 21, where it's really a story of great faith. And there's a particular person that he's going to help the disciples to see and help them to learn, and hopefully help us to learn a little bit more about what great faith is. So, let's read just a little bit. First of all, chapter 15, starting in verse 21, we'll read 21 to 28. Jesus went away from there, withdrew to the district of Tyre and Sidon. Behold, a Canaanite woman came out from that region and began to cry out, saying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is cruelly demon-possessed." But he didn't answer her a word. And his disciples came to him and kept asking him, saying, "Send her away, for she's shouting out after us." But he answered and said, "I was only sent here to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and began to bow down before him, saying, "Lord, help me." And he answered and said, "It's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." But she said, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs feed on the crumbs which fall from the master's table." And Jesus answered and said to her, "O woman, your faith is great. Be it done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed at once. First of all, notice where this story takes place. The district of Tyre and Sidon. Well, on our map, probably not the best map I could have chosen. But here's where he sort of begins. Well, I can't reach up there. It's up there on the Sea of Galilee on the west, on the eastern side. And then over on the other side, over on the coast, is Tyre. You have a little pointer there. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, that's better. Your cursor on the computer? Hey, you're right. I don't see it. There we go. Hey, there you go. Good job.
Do that too.
All right. All right. So there is the Sea of Galilee, and over this area is the area of the Gennesarene or Gerasenes, Gennesaret, and up here is the city of Tyre. And Sidon is further up the coast. So he travels from here to here, which is about 50 miles. And they probably walked. I guess they could have taken some type of animal, but probably they walked. So 50 miles up the coast. They would have probably gone on foot. That would have been about a two-day journey, 25 miles a day. And when it says he withdrew, did you notice that in verse 15 or verse 21? And Jesus went away from there, and he withdrew into the district of Tyre and Sidon. Hang on just a minute. There, look at that. I put it on there. I forgot. Look, there's the. Isn't that neat? You know, you forget these things. You do this on Monday, and then by Friday, I don't even remember you did it. All right. So here's the context of the story. I already did that. I'm way behind here, huh? Way behind. All right. So there's the better rap. Let's see if I can catch up with myself. He withdrew. Verse 21. He withdrew. So he withdrew probably because he was trying to get away with his disciples to rest, trying to regroup. The whole kind of the behind this incident was a lot of stuff. The disciples had gone out preaching. In their first preaching experience, they came back. During that time, John the Baptist was beheaded. He tried to get them together to regroup, to talk, to go away to a deserted place. But the multitudes found him. He had to feed 5,000 people. He can't get away. He can't be with them just to rest, to talk, to help answer their questions. And so I believe he's still trying to find that place where he can just spend some time with his disciples. And perhaps also to escape some of the attacks of the Pharisees. You know why the Pharisees probably wouldn't go there? Because it's the district of Tyre and Sidon. It's a unclean land, isn't it? I want you to notice that. Notice all the references to something that's unclean. Tyre and Sidon. Gentile territory. Pharisees probably wouldn't go there. But while he's there, a woman finds him. And not just any woman, but it says in verse 22, she is a Canaanite woman. Canaanites. Who are the Canaanites? Ancient enemies of God's people from the Old Testament. So she is a descendant of some of the very people that God drove out of Israel. Some of the very people that He made laws in the Old Testament book of Leviticus to help keep them separate from those kind of people. To keep them pure. This woman, at least, was a descendant of the Canaanites. And her daughter, it says, was demon-possessed. But not just demon-possessed. It mentions, my version here says it, in the end of verse 22, she was cruelly demon-possessed. And look that word up, it means that she suffered horrors. And her appeal to the Lord sort of rips your heart out. I gotta see if I put these things down. I want you to just notice she's a Canaanite. She was cruelly demon possessed, and she appealed to the Lord. She said, "Have mercy on me." In verse 22, anyone with a child can imagine, and especially if you're a mother, what you might do and what lengths you might go to help your daughter. And Mark's account, he records this in chapter 7. He says that she fell at his feet and she kept asking him. To help. She kept asking him to help, begging him to help. She was relentless. What about the disciples? How about them? What were they doing in all this? Well, they kept asking too. Did you notice that? Chapter 15, verse 23, he didn't answer her word, and his disciples came to him and kept asking him, saying, "Send her away, for she's shouting after us." Well, sounds to me like she's bothering them. She's annoying them. They don't want her around. And so send her away. She's grating on our nerves. They had come there to get away from things, right? They'd come there to have some rest, R&R. And now here's this woman and another interruption to what they want. And have you ever had that happen to you? Ever had that happen? You know, you're doing something for yourself. Something you need for yourself. And somebody comes along and messes up your plans. Calls you on the phone. You're trying to watch something on TV and you have to turn the TV off and go and talk to somebody on the phone. Just messes up what you're trying to do for yourself. Or you have to get up from the table. And next time, by the time you get back, your food's cold. Or you have to change your plans because somebody else wants something of you. Sounds like that's kind of the way it's going. Send this woman away. She's bothering me. It's interesting that they want him to send her away, I believe, with what she wants. so that she'll leave them alone. In verse 24, it says, but he answered and said, I think he's responding to them. They say, send her away, for she's shouting after us. But he answered and said, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So they're kind of saying to him, listen, just give her what she wants. Heal her daughter, and then she'll go away. So think about that for a minute, because, you know, the easiest way to get rid of somebody who's bothering you is just give them what they want, and they'll leave you alone. The irony of this is what? That this woman, they would be saying, will you just heal this Gentile's daughter so she'll go away? That's not typically how these disciples are they? They don't really typically like these Gentiles. But you know, if it means that maybe she'll go away and leave them alone, then just go ahead and heal the lady or heal her daughter. Jesus' response is what really usually catches people's attention in this story. In fact, it's a lot of times the reason that people don't want to deal with this. Verse 24, or go back in verse 23, but he did not answer her a word. Isn't that interesting? Wouldn't even give her an answer. Wouldn't give her the time of day. Isn't that kind of rude? Why would he do that? That's not like Jesus. People really struggle with this story. It's so out of character for him. In fact, I read one place where there's some people that will say it's kind of a fabrication. It probably really didn't happen. Because it's so hard to figure out why he would do that. Did you hear what she called him? Verse 22. Going back one verse. She said, have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. She is a believer. The irony is that in Jesus' home country, he can't hardly find anybody to really believe in him. He goes to another country, to the land of the Gentiles, and he finds someone who refers to him as the Son of David. Now, I think two reasons. First of all, David was known as a king in Canaan, in Israel years before, as a very compassionate man, a merciful king. Therefore, people came to him because he would show mercy. And so she was calling on him, have mercy on me. But the other thing was, David was promised that his son, one of his sons, would be the Messiah. And so she is proclaiming her faith in him, which is interesting. That he has a believer standing before him, but he answered her not a word. In fact, furthermore, verse 24, he says to her, in verse 24, I have only been sent, or he says, I think to the disciples, I was only sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. You know, they say, listen, why don't you just heal this woman's daughter and we can be done with her and she'll go away. And Jesus says, what? What? I was only sent to the children's, that lost sheep of the house of Israel. I think that's what he's doing. Wait a minute, I was only sent to Israel's children. You want me to help her? I'm for the Jews. This is kind of like the Good Samaritan story, only Jesus is imitating the priest and the Levite. You know what I mean? I said it's kind of like a white surgeon in the 1950s who's walking down the streets of New York City with all of his white buddies, and he comes across a black mother in agony on the sidewalk, and her daughter's just been stabbed in a robbery attempt, and she cries out for him to help, but he walks by on the other side smirking and making some remark about her race. This was the Pharisee's attitude on defilement and living color. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is a great imitation of a Pharisaic attitude in living color. Jesus is acting exactly like the elders would have wanted him to act in such a situation. I think this is for the sake of the disciples. They needed to see the despicableness of human tradition. What that can lead to. You know, you think about where Paul told us in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 17, he says to believers, come out from among them and be ye separate. Come out from among the unclean and be ye separate. Do not touch them, and I will make you sons and daughters to me. Do you think that's what God was what the Lord was shooting for us to be like priests and Levites and just go around the other side of the street and avoid people? Arrogant, kind of unmerciful, unloving. Very opposite of really anything that God desires in us. So what does the woman do? What does she do? Well, what would you do? What would you do if you were in her shoes and Jesus did that to you? Wouldn't answer you a word. Well, she, in verse 25, bows down before him. She began to bow down before him and say, and she said, "Lord, help me." Same as earlier. It doesn't change a thing for her. She's still asking him for help. Would you have left by now? Remember, he has what she needs. He has what she needs. So the Lord really kind of continues to challenge her in a sense. Look at verse 26. And he answered and said, It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. It's not good to take the blessings that were meant for God's children and give them to the dogs. Dogs is a racial slur toward the Gentiles. That's kind of what some Jew might say about Gentiles. They're just dogs. I think Jesus plays this out to the nth degree, to the hill. He pulls the mask off of traditionalism and he shows just how ugly it really is. The disciples, they may have wanted to say amen to what he was saying, but more likely they're probably standing there with their mouths hanging open. Is this the guy we've been with? You really can't take what he's saying at face value, because he has shown mercy and compassion to Gentiles up to now, has he not? All the way back to chapter 4 and verse 24, when news, and that this is a pretty significant one, he was going about Galilee, teaching in synagogues, proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom. And it says in verse 24, this is chapter 4 and verse 24, the news about him went out into all Syria. That's where we're at, up in Syria. And they brought him all who were ill, taken with various diseases and pains, demoniacs, epileptics, paralytics, and he healed them. So this is not the first time he's healed people from Syria. And then in chapter 8 and verse 5, there was a centurion servant who was sick. And the centurion sent word to him and entreated him to help his servant. And Jesus heals the servant. And so you have to read this story and understand this is Jesus, I believe, trying to teach his disciples something. But her reply, again, is impressive, as that she responds to this comment that he makes, that, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. Verse 27, she said, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs feed on the crumbs which fall from the master's table." She accepts it. She doesn't even debate him about her status as a dog. She humbly requests, well, if there are any blessings left from the Jewish blessings, can I just have one? Can I just have the crumbs? That's all I'm asking. And it's at that point that Jesus drops the facade. In verse 27 or verse 28, He's answered and said to her, "O woman, your faith is great. Be it done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed at once. It's interesting that when I looked around for this, this is, I think, the first time he ever made this statement. Your faith is great. Now, he said other things similar to that. He said to another woman, "Your faith has made you well." Chapter 9. And he said to a woman, I think that story is in the book of Mark. He said, anytime the gospel is preached about what she did, it'll be spoken of her, the woman who washed his feet. And to the centurion, back in chapter 8, He said, I have not found such great faith with anyone in Israel. So, that's pretty close. But your faith is great. And I always think these kind of stories are impressive to think about, because would the Lord say that about us?
Yeah.
Would He say about you, you have great faith? What was it that impressed Him about this woman? So I just wrote down five things that I thought was noteworthy about this woman that we need to imitate. And then I made a couple of points about Jesus and the way He regarded her. First, with a woman, a great faith is one that's found in unexpected places, which I'm sure you've already thought about that. You would have expected to find that kind of faith in that unclean land of the Gentiles in Tyre and Sidon. And so my question is, for myself, for us, are we looking in the wrong places to find great faith? Are we looking in the right places? Because there exists great faith today. But are we looking in the places where we're going to find that? How many of us are searching among those who we in our purity have a hard time associating with? Are we going to the wrong neighborhoods? What side of town do we typically go to when we search for faith? Do we go to the clean part of town? Or do we go to the dirty part of town? We need to be where people are who know that they're in trouble and they need help. Now, certainly people of all races and all economic levels and all that kind of stuff can all come to an understanding that they need help. They can. But where a lot of times did Jesus find the people who knew they needed help and who really had great faith? Faith is found in unexpected places. We need to think about that, be conscientious about that when we're looking for people to teach. Another is that worship, that a great faith worships before it receives the blessings. She is bowing before the Lord and begging for help. And He hasn't even responded yet. She knew she needed help. A lot of times, people won't worship Jesus unless they've already got what they want. You know, once He answers my needs, once He does for me what I want, then I'll consider giving Him maybe what He wants. But first me, then maybe Him. And certainly He did sometimes heal people. But this woman was willing to worship Him and fall at His feet before she ever received the blessing. She worships in hope of getting what she needed. And I think she worshiped with expectation. She was determined. She really believed. And we were talking about hope this morning. She really believed that He did have what she wanted and she could attain that from Him. And so she worshiped Him in hope of getting what she needed. A great faith will worship even before they receive the blessings. They're ready to fall down on their knees. The third one is that she endured the severity of the test that was before. Some people might turn their back on God just for allowing their daughter to be possessed. Some people might turn their back on God and walk away because one of their children was crippled, or one of their children were maimed, or deformed, or infected with something. They blame Him. They say, any God who'd let this happen to my child is not worth a God worth worshiping. But if somebody would turn away from God for that reason, how much more would they turn their back on God after He treated them so coldly and indifferently, when He wouldn't even answer her a word? It doesn't seem like He's explaining to her. He doesn't take her aside and say, now listen, I need to help these disciples understand something here. So just play along with me for a while, and then I'll help your daughter. He doesn't tell her that. You know, and sometimes if we don't get treated with the utmost respect, the people fawning all over us, tiptoeing around so they don't offend us, at the first offense, somebody will say it, I'm leaving. I'm leaving. I don't need to be here. I don't care if they do teach the truth or not. You know, I'm going where I can be appreciated. Right? You ever heard somebody like that? They only stay on the condition that they're treated with the utmost reverence and respect. But this woman's had real faith. She endured the test. And so her faith is seen in also in her perseverance, that she won't give up. She's still begging. She's still pleading. Even after Jesus rebuffs her, even after his disciples want to dispose of her, she's still there. Remember that the next time you're angry, next time you're angry because they don't treat you the right way at church, okay? We ought to be the kind of people that treat each other well, right? Because we're Christians. But sometimes we mess up. But the next time you don't get treated really well, ask yourself if you're the person that's going to get angry and say, I'm out of here. You know, I'll go find somebody that treats me well. Is that what my religion amounts to? Finding people that'll take, you know, treat me well? Or am I interested in the truth? Do I really need the Lord? She even takes an insult from him and turns it into an opportunity. When he says, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs, she says, yes, Lord, but even the dogs feed the crumbs which fall from the master's table. She went through the door of opportunity. And then she had a faith that prevailed. Great faith prevails. Made me think of Jacob. Do you remember an incident in the life of Jacob when he wrestled with an angel? Remember that? All the way back in the book of Genesis? And chapter 32. And the angel, they wrestled, it said, all night. And the angel said, let me go. And Jacob said, I will not let you go until you bless me. And the angel said, well, your name's no longer going to be Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men, and you have prevailed. Seems to me like this Canaanite woman in the unclean land of the Phoenicia was a true daughter of Jacob, for she strove with God and she prevailed. She would not let go until she got the blessing she came for. It was a great faith because it prevailed over God. It stayed and it kept trying until it got the blessing that it was hoping for. And what she wanted was something for her daughter, salvation for her daughter from the sickness that she had. Last thing I want you to notice is just Jesus, some things that impressed me about him. Number one is that he left the land of the Jews, walked 50 miles to the land of the Gentiles to find a single woman who had a pure heart. There's no indication here that he had any other appointment in Tyre and Sidon. Verse 29 of that chapter says, and departing from there, after he healed her daughter, says he departed from there, and Jesus went back along the Sea of Galilee. So he went back. So I thought, how far are we willing to go for one person? How many traditions am I willing to break? You know, how much will I put myself out? How much will I sacrifice myself? How much will I do without for me? How much am I willing to inconvenience myself? He walked 50 miles into unclean territory to the disgust, I'm sure, of any Jewish leader, people of respectable nature. And he didn't care. He cared about that heart that was up there. How much am I willing to inconvenience myself or disregard what other people think to win one pure heart? And I want you to remember the whole context, that it was really about purity, about the clean versus the unclean. Remember the context in which this thing is set. This woman, I think, had a pure heart. And Jesus went after her. He left behind all the Pharisees who believed that they had the market cornered on purity. Those people thought they were the most pure people on the planet. He left them all behind. Tells me something. If I don't get my heart right, I am in trouble. If all I can boast about in purity is keeping some rituals and traditions, then he will walk right out the door and he will go find somebody who really is sincerely seeking him. We better make sure we have our hearts right, more than just our traditions right or our rituals right. There's a lot more that he wants than just rituals. He wants a pure heart. And then The other thing that he did that I thought was important is that he took his disciples with him in order, I think, to purify them. I think Jesus was determined to bring up a new generation without all the misguided traditions of the past. These disciples he was trying to prepare to be those who would be leaders in his kingdom, who he eventually would send out into all the world to these Gentile people to try to save them. And he had to train them, flush out all of the traditions that were just as much part of their heart as it was anybody else's. And so he got them out of the mix, took them away with him to that land. And he used teaching opportunities well too, didn't he? I don't think I ever could have been that creative on the spot. But he did something very dramatic to illustrate for them, help them understand, to bring the point really home so they would find it easier maybe to understand how bad that kind of mindset was. Help them know what it meant to want to get away from that, to separate themselves from that type of attitude that characterized their nation as a whole. So he took his disciples with him in order to purify them, to help them to know. And then lastly, as he gave her heart's desire. I like in verse 28, Jesus answered and said to her, "O woman, your faith is great. Be it done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed at once. At once. It was done. He didn't need to see the daughter, didn't need to go to her, didn't need to put his hands on her, didn't need to do some great thing. His word was sufficient. Be it done as you wish. God rewards great faith. Jesus said that to us, he said, pray, and Jesus taught his disciples, pray and do not lose heart. He who asks, receives. He who seeks, finds. He who knocks, to him who knocks, will be open to you. If we will purify ourselves, he will purify us. But if all we do is go through the motions and rituals, it's not going to do us any good. John told the people coming to be baptized, he said, produce fruit leading to repentance. And in James chapter 4, verse 8, the last verse, I just want to read that real quick. James wrote to some Christians who had needed to learn this very lesson. He said in chapter 4 and verse 8, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. Here are people who are unclean, but they were in church every Sunday. Christians. But they needed to purify themselves and have a single mind with God as the center of their hearts, and then he would purify them. So if you need to do that tonight, this is the time to do it. Jesus will walk 50 miles to meet you where you are if you're really willing to seek him with a pure heart. He came from heaven to earth, to this world of uncleanness, full of sin, and walked among us in order to provide the sacrifice that we need so that we can be pure. Maybe tonight you would do that. Purify yourself. Be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins. When you meet him, come and do what he says. He will meet you and he will fulfill his promise and forgive you for your sins. Would you come forward as we stand and sing our song?